Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Well, it's something that we all studied at school and something that we use in everyday life, but maths is probably not something that we would typically describe as beautiful.
No, I certainly wouldn't, and don't use it very much in everyday life. I'm sort of getting right to the edge of what I can do in terms of helping my Year 8 daughter with her maths.
Yeah, it's kind of not something that everybody takes to, mathematics. But recently I saw a movie about quote, the most romantic figure in recent mathematical history, and realised that maybe there is more beauty and even romance to be found in the world of mathematics than expected.
What do you see?
Sand.
Imagine if we could look so closely, we could see each grain, each particle. You see, there are patterns in everything.
The Man Who Knew Infinity is a movie about Srinivasa Ramanujan, who was this self-taught mathematical genius from what was then Madras. He moved to Cambridge University in 1914 to work with the eminent mathematician G.H. Hardy. And what unfolds is not only a story about their incredible work, but also an unlikely friendship. Ramanujan was a devout Hindu, and his faith was central to everything he did. He's famously quoted as saying that an equation for me has no meaning unless it expresses a thought of God.
We need proofs of your work.
But they are right, sir.
How did you know that theorem?
It came to me. You wanted to know how I get my ideas. God speaks to me.
There are no proofs. We're just supposed to take him at his word.
Hardy, on the other hand, was a hard-boiled atheist who was a stickler for proofs.
Mr. Littlewood has calculated a number, and it shows that your theorem will sometimes predict less, not more, than the actual number of primes. Your theorem is wrong, and this is why we cannot publish any more until you finally trust me on this business of proofs.
It sounds like this movie raises some interesting questions about divine inspiration, whether having faith is the opposite of having proof, and also this idea of finding beauty and wonder in maths. I recently had the chance to chat with Oxford mathematician John Lennox about whether he finds maths beautiful, and we're going to hear from him later on. And we're also, something a bit different, going to hear a poet, who also happens to be a former Archbishop of Canterbury, read and explain a poem of his. But first, we've got a homegrown, very eminent mathematician, Professor Cheryl Praeger, Director of the Centre for Mathematics of Symmetry and Computation at the University of Western Australia. She was appointed as a member of the Order of Australia in 1999 and received the Centenary Medal of the Australian Government in 2003 for her service to mathematics in Australia. We've got her on the line today to speak about maths and beauty, faith and proof. She's someone who thinks you can detect the patterns of God's reality within mathematics. So Cheryl, you've seen The Man Who Knew Infinity. It's not every day that you see a movie about mathematics hitting the big screen, although there have been a few. What did you make of it?
Oh, I thought it was an absolutely a wonderful film. I think it's the best film about mathematics that's ever been made. It really rings true to mathematicians, and it's a fantastic story as well, quite a romantic story.
Now, as a mathematician, you're already familiar with Ramanujan's equations. I wanted to ask you, how important is he in the world of mathematics today?
I think every serious mathematician has heard of Ramanujan. His work was highly influential in modern developments in number theory, which isn't quite my area, but I've heard of him a lot. And he has been commemorated with a couple of prizes which make his life live on.
What about his faith? Now, he was quite a devout Hindu and he believed his mathematical insights were a divine gift. How did you respond to that side of the story?
Well, that was very clear coming through in the movie. We saw how important his spiritual life was for him, both in India and then in the UK when he travels to work in Cambridge with the great G.H. Hardy. He's having difficulties settling in with the culture, but a lot of it is his determination to maintain his spiritual life. And I think his religious beliefs were such a central part of his life and the way he worked that really came through in the movie. And then I read a bit more about it afterwards. There was one scene where he is paying his devotions to, I guess, to a figurine of the Hindu god, and that is a very, very moving scene. Later on, in reading about it, I realized that he ascribed some of his mathematical insight to divine inspiration, and I found that very, very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he famously said that an equation for me has no meaning unless it expresses a thought of God. And obviously he has specific Hindu beliefs, but he's not the only kind of mathematician to think that way about the relationship between divine reality and human kind of intellectual endeavor, is he?
No, not at all. I mean, that goes way, way back to trying philosophical approaches to working out what is reality in the reality that we can't see. You know, what is mathematical reality? Do we construct something? Do we create something? Or are we discovering a mathematical reality that's already there? I think every scientist probably has an internal view about how they regard their own work.
I want to ask you about whether your study of maths has in any way tied in with or bolstered perhaps your Christian faith.
It definitely has. I'm one of those people who deeply feel that I am discovering a mathematical reality when I prove a new theorem, when I discover something new, a new construction. I'm actually thinking of an experience I had when I was a young researcher. There was something I very much wanted to prove, and it was really, really, really difficult to prove it. And I spent years of my life, it was to do with the actions of certain elements in primitive permutation groups. So I'm an algebraist. And I decided I would give one more year of my life to trying to prove this result I believe was true. I didn't quite know exactly what the result would be. And I was completely immersed. I would not be able to go to sleep without thinking about it. And there were several breakthroughs which actually happened while I was asleep. My mind was continuing to work, and I would be sort of working through this complicated series of steps. But on two occasions, I actually had part of a theorem when I woke up. I'd scribble something down so I could go to sleep. And then in the morning, on these two occasions, I had the two big breakthroughs for proving that theorem. And I felt that I was discovering part of God's reality. I had a great deal of freedom and joy, exhilaration afterwards, even though I was quite exhausted, and it would take me several weeks in order to put in all the details and write down all the proofs, but in fact that stood up, and that was my best contribution up to that point.
It's always great to hear an expert talking passionately about their work. Cheryl Praeger, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. If you've just joined us, we're talking about maths and faith, beauty and proof, and how these are not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Beauty is, I would go so far as to say, an essential part of mathematics.
This is Oxford mathematics professor John Lennox.
Paul Dirac, who won the Nobel Prize, a brilliant mathematician, theoretical physicist, said if an equation isn't beautiful, it's probably wrong.
I was in the UK recently doing interviews for our upcoming documentary For the Love of God, and I had the privilege of speaking with John while I was there. So we thought we'd ask him to share his thoughts about the beauty of mathematics and whether he experiences it as pointing to the transcendent.
And there is that sense, even at the lowly levels of mathematics that I did, of sensing that there is a beauty here. And it evokes in you a sense there's something more around here. The Bible's very realistic, you see. It says that there are certain things that can be read off about God from the creation, but they're limited. That there is a God that is powerful is about as far as it goes. And that he's interested in aesthetics, because we often find in mathematics it's the elegance, it's the beautiful description that fits. And you take things like Newton's second law, his laws of motion in general, the law of gravitation. I mean, they're exquisitely beautiful. That here you have an equation with 8 symbols in it, and you can deduce from that the motion of the planets around the sun in elliptical orbits. I find that exquisitely beautiful.
The more I think about this idea of beauty in maths and, you know, hearing John Lennox speak about it so eloquently, the more I realise how much I really don't know about this really quite remarkable world of numbers. So I came across this quote when we were doing some research for the show. It's a quote from Paul Erdős, who was one of the most prolific mathematicians of the 20th century. And he said, "Why are numbers beautiful? It's like asking, why is Beethoven's Ninth Symphony beautiful? If you don't see why, someone can't tell you. I know numbers are beautiful. If they aren't beautiful, nothing is." And this comparison of maths and numbers to music and art, that's something I've come across elsewhere in a poem by former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, which explores the abstract mathematical beauty of Bach's cello suites.
Yes, Rowan Williams just happened to be one of the people we were interviewing in the UK for our documentary, and he kindly agreed to read us that poem. And fortunately, I have to say, to explain it to us as well. So to end our episode exploring maths and beauty, faith and proof, here's Rowan Williams reading his poem, Bach for the Cello.
By mathematics we shall come to heaven. This page, the door of God's Academy for the geometer, where the pale lines involve a continent, transcribe the countryside of formal light, kindle with friction. Passion will scorch deep in these sharp canals. Under the level moon, desire runs fast. The flesh aches on its string, without consummation, without loss. The image I began with in this poem was the inscription over the academy in Athens, "Let nobody enter here who doesn't care about geometry." You think, what a bizarre thing to say. But I thought about the intensely mathematical nature of Bach's great abstract music. And I think of the cello suites as the greatest example of Bach as an abstract musician. He's looking at patterns running off in all directions, and all of them generated by a set of very simple relationships. It's mathematical in that sense. So, yes, by mathematics we shall come to heaven, was the line that came to me first. But I thought also of the way in which the cello itself, that most rounded and eloquent of solo string instruments, seems to be like the carving of a deep line, a canal, a channel, something which, yes, like a canal, allows something to run. Passion will scorch deep in these sharp canals. And the mysterious fact then that out of this very abstract, very mathematical set of relationships comes a depth of emotion, almost emotion you have got a word for. And what do the cello suites make you feel? Happy? Sad? I don't know. They make you feel. Hence, the flesh aches on its string. A sort of almost unbearable intensity of yearning, a sheer depth of awareness that comes out. And so, without consummation, without loss. It's not a feeling that comes to a climax and a release, and at the same time, it's not a feeling that just comes and goes. It's a level of sheer felt presence that is generated there. And that's why, for me, the cello suites are the supreme music, I have to say, even in Bach.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Whether you consider yourself a numbers person or not, we hope you enjoyed this episode exploring the beautiful world of maths. If you're keen to hear more from us, you can find previous episodes of Life and Faith on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us.
Next week, we'll bring you an interview with William Kavanagh, who's also the speaker at this year's Richard Johnson Lecture, the annual Centre for Public Christianity lecture. If you're in Sydney, you won't want to miss that. So just head to our website, publicchristianity.org, for details. Hope you'll join us then.